It's been more than 200 years since Ada Lovelace famously developed one of the first computer programs in human history. And yet, still today, women remain underrepresented in the fields of computer science and engineering. Today, we're going to look at some of the lesser known facts for why that is. Welcome to a very special episode of Mint Blowing.
You're listening to Mint Blowing, the podcast featuring important topics and exciting guests from the world of STEM education.
We are here today at the MESH MINT expert meeting in Berlin. For those of you who do not know this acronym, MINT, M-I-N-T, is the German equivalent for STEM. So we're going to talk a lot about STEM education today. My name is Alexandra Resch. I'm from the German Informatics Society. And I'm joined here today by Professor Sapna Cherian, whose research at the University of Washington explores how cultural stereotypes and like really small environmental cues can already make a difference in whether people feel like they belong in STEM or whether they don't. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I think when most people, when they hear STEM, the first thing that comes to mind is kind of technology, numbers, laboratories. Mm-hmm. But your research is actually more about culture and identity and the sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as to how this goes together with STEM. How do you explain to people what this has to do with STEM?
Yeah. Well, it turns out that we are very social creatures, humans, and that we are always trying to figure out where we belong. Mm-hmm. And that's true in our social lives, but it's also true in our career and school lives, that a lot of ways that we make decisions about what to major in, what classes to take, what kind of jobs to take is, of course, like the skills and the competencies you develop matter. But it turns out that sometimes even more important than that is how much you feel like you fit in, how much you feel like you relate to the people there, how much you feel this sense of belonging, that you can be successful in that field, you can have this sense that you can reach your potential. And it turns out different fields gives different messages to different people. And so if we want to get more, for example, girls and women into STEM, we need to make sure that not only are they well trained for those fields, but they also feel like there's a place for them in those fields that mm-hmm. they can enter. They can be just as welcome as the boys and the men are, and that they could be successful there.
Mm-hmm. We're going to deep dive into this in quite a second. But first, my colleagues have prepared a few facts about your research, so you don't have to explain all of it at once, which we will hear now.
Three facts about Professor Sapna Cherian's research on cultural stereotypes. Fact 1. Transforming STEM culture. Professor Sapna Cherian investigates how STEM departments and workplaces can change their cultures to attract and retain more women. Fact 2. Rethinking race in the US. Her research explores how recent immigrant groups are reshaping the way race and racial identity are understood in American society. Fact 3. The hidden harm of positive stereotypes. She examines the unintended negative effects of positive stereotypes.
Let's get straight into the topic of stereotypes. Can you give us a few examples of how these stereotypes are showing up in educational settings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like two sets of stereotypes that I study. There's stereotypes about girls and women themselves. So there's stereotypes that like girls are, for example, less good at fields like computer science mm-hmm. and engineering. And also, we've also done a lot of work on a second stereotype that I think is less commonly talked about, but is definitely influential. And that's the stereotype that girls and women are less interested in these fields. Mm-hmm. And we've done some work recently showing that these stereotypes that girls are less interested in these fields when these stereotypes are salient and when they're like in the environment, that girls actually become less interested in the field because these stereotypes exist. So that's one set of stereotypes about girls and women and their capabilities and their interests. The second set of stereotypes that we study are stereotypes about the fields themselves, like who's in the fields, who's successful in them, who belongs in them. Mm-hmm. And those stereotypes, what we've shown is in fields like computer science, engineering, and physics, students have these very strong stereotypes that the types of people in these fields are mostly men. They're people who like to, for example, play a lot of video games and drink a lot of energy drinks and stay up all night coding, and they've learned programming since they were really young, and they're kind of socially awkward. And there's like just a long list of stereotypes mm-hmm. that you can just get if you just ask students, like, when you think of computer scientists, what do you think of? They'll just give you all these kinds of stereotypes. And those stereotypes show up in television shows, movies. They show up sometimes in the spaces. So we've studied that as well. So like computer science classrooms, startup companies. Mm-hmm. So startup companies that have video games or have like, you know, Star Trek stuff in the mm-hmm. company. And they can also show up in the way that people dress or interact with other people or what they choose to do. So these are various ways that these stereotypes can kind of get out there and get communicated to girls and other people.
What was your personal motivation to get into this field, to look at these factors?
Yeah, my motivation was actually an experience I had. So when I was in graduate school, I decided for a summer that I would try to interview for jobs in different tech companies. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do like user research. And I applied to different tech companies and I got a few interviews. And I remember going to the first interview that I had. And I went into the building and I was being walked to the room where the interview was going to happen. And I was just looking at the building, mm-hmm. as you would. And I remember seeing like a lot of things that fit the kind of stereotype of what a startup would look like. And so mm-hmm. as I was on my way to the interview, I remember thinking, oh, I don't know if I would really like have a good summer here. I just don't think I would really relate to this culture or the people in this environment. And I ended up having actually a really good interview. I would have been working on cell phones. And this is like the early 2000s, so it would have been really cool to work on cell phones at that time. And they were going to pay me like a lot more than my graduate student salary. Yeah. And it was close to campus. And but I actually ended up not taking that job. And I ended up, the second interview I went on, I walked into the lobby and the company was Adobe. So it was like this beautiful graphics design company, very colorful, open, lots of light. There's a gym and a cafeteria. And even before I went to the room, my interview room, I was sitting in that lobby and I remember saying to myself, oh, I could really see I think I would really have a good summer if I worked here. Mm-hmm. Like I hadn't met anybody or like known anything about what the work I would do. But just based on like my experience of what that environment looked like, I made all these judgments about what the work would be like mm-hmm. and the people would be like. Mm-hmm. And they actually were going to pay me less. It was further from campus and it was less interesting, the work. But I ended up taking that internship and I actually worked at Adobe for several years after that. And so right after those interviews, when I came back to campus, I was like, wow, that was a really big decision that I just made based on just what was in the environment. And it started getting me wondering like, oh, I wonder if one of the reasons that girls and women are so underrepresented in fields like computer science is because of these stereotypes that exist about like who's in these companies mm-hmm. and majors and whether we could actually change those stereotypes by changing the spaces. Mm-hmm. Could we redecorate or redesign, expose girls to different types of spaces and then maybe that would increase their interest in being in them.
It's super interesting how quickly this happens, right? At point where you haven't even spoken to a person.
That's
yet,
right. Yeah.
And it's already sending mm-hmm. you, as you said, it's already sending you messages. I find that really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
There have been, you know, like women in tech, STEM girls, there have been all of these initiatives and a lot of efforts to drive this up. And I wonder, what's your take on why these efforts are not or still not moving the needle in a meaningful way? Why are they not reaching the point that they are trying to get at?
I think sometimes when places try to make change, they'll do one small thing. Like they'll be like, we're going to introduce one small program or we're going to show our students a role model or something that's kind of local, small. Maybe it's operating on girls or women, you know, but it doesn't really change the broader culture. Mm-hmm. And the types of changes I think are needed are often more structural changes to like, you know, kind of broader ideas about what the mission of the companies can be, changes to policies and practices on the ground, changes to the way that interactions happen in meetings, changes to people's beliefs, if you can, which is probably the hardest of all those things mm-hmm. to change. Mm-hmm. And all of those kind of have to happen somewhat simultaneously so that a whole culture can change. Mm-hmm. And there are examples of places that have done it. They've picked a couple of things that really make a difference. But I think it's quite hard to do it without some kind of external force or some really heavy top-down leadership. Yeah.
And in general, in terms of diversity, if we talk about diversity, we need to talk a bit about how the situation is in the US at the moment. Mm-hmm. Can you share a bit your experience with the discussions that are being held in tech startups and universities? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is the vibe at the moment?
Yeah, since Trump came back into office, I think there's been kind of a rollback of efforts mm-hmm. to diversify, and kind of a fear around it too. And I think a lot of universities and companies had, after 2020, put out a lot of mission statements, started some programs, started thinking about their processes. And the evidence so far that's come out of people who've been studying it is that a lot of that has been kind of rolled back. Mm-hmm. Some of it because the companies wanted to roll up, like they chose to do that, maybe out of some fear, maybe because they weren't very serious about it in the first place, you know. And others, are maybe trying to continue to do it, but are worried about backlash. And so I think there's kind of a culture of fear. I think there are still places that are trying to stand up and resist, you know, mm-hmm. And continuing to do what they think is important. But it does feel like there's been a shift in what's being valued and rewarded. Mm-hmm. Right now.
Yeah, I think diversity. We feel this shift in Germany as well, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and obviously are looking quite anxiously in that direction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even more important that we are, you know, identifying all of the non-verbal mm-hmm. factors that can be already done. Another thing you're working on is masculine defaults. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a bit more what's behind that?
Yeah, so masculine defaults is this form of bias that exists in some environments where the traits and characteristics associated with the male gender role are valued, rewarded, or kind of seen as standard practice mm-hmm. in an environment. So for example, environments where you have to be very assertive to get ahead, or you have to promote yourself, or where there's a lot of interruption happening. Those are traits and characteristics that are commonly associated more with men than women. And when you have to kind of do those things or engage in those behaviors, it can be more challenging for some women than some men. And the reason it's more challenging for women is because often they're not socialized to engage in those behaviors. Or if they do engage them, they receive backlash. They receive social and economic penalties for mm-hmm. acting assertive or being very dominant. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of places that masculine defaults can exist in organizations or in, you know, academic environments. They can exist in these broader ideas about who is good or who is successful. They can exist in policies or in practices. They can also exist in kind of interaction styles that people have with each other. And then they can also exist in individuals' minds. And so when we think about addressing masculine defaults, if we can address them on all these different levels, then we can help to remedy them.
Do you have best practice cases in where these masculine defaults were addressed and maybe ideally even changed?
Yeah, there's many examples, and I'll give you a really good one, my favorite example. So there's a small engineering college in California called Harvey Mudd. Mm-hmm. And in the early 2000s, only 10% of their computer science degrees were going to women. Mm-hmm. And less than a decade later, over 50% of their computer science degrees were going to women. And so they became this very interesting case study. Like, what did they do to get such change, like pretty rapid change and such dramatic change? And one of the things they did was really interesting. They basically realized that they had this very strong masculine default in their department, and that was that they really valued and rewarded students who had prior programming experience. Mm-hmm. And this is a masculine default because boys are much more likely to get prior programming experience than girls are. And that's because computer science is often optional. If you learn it extracurricularly or through a course that you had to choose to take. And girls are less likely to get those kinds of experiences than boys are. And so what they were doing before making changes is they, you know, their classes were kind of oriented towards students who had prior programming experience. They would do better in the classes. They were seen as better students. Mm-hmm. And they were more likely to go on and graduate and do well in their department. And they realized, you know, you shouldn't have to have prior programming experience to be able to be a computer science major at our college. You should be able to come in and we can teach you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what they did was, I thought, very smart. They made this structural change where they ended up taking their intro to computer science class and they split it into two classes. Mm-hmm. And they had one class that was for students who had prior programming experience, okay, and the other class for students who didn't have it. And they had students just self-select into these classes. So you didn't have to like take a test or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You just said you had experience or you didn't. And what that ended up doing was it ended up creating a class environment where they didn't, the students who didn't have prior programming experience didn't feel like they were less smart or further behind. They just felt like they were the students who didn't have the experience.
Had a more of a safe space.
That's right. Yeah. And they created this space that was much less intimidating to learn because they weren't constantly, you know, hearing from the students who already knew everything in the class asking super advanced questions. Mm-hmm. The classes didn't, they got to the same place in the end. So they didn't let the students who had the experience get further in the curriculum. They had them end at the same place so that they could enter the second class on kind of a more level playing field. Mm-hmm. And this was a great intervention because not only did they, create this nice environment, but it was a signal to students who didn't have prior programming experience that there's a place for you in this department. Mm-hmm. Like, you could come in, we'll teach you. And then what the faculty ended up noticing is, after a while, they started noticing that their best students were sometimes from this class that had come in with no prior programming experience. So they were able to change faculty's beliefs that previously they had thought you just really have to have this experience. And now they started realizing, oh, I guess you could actually learn it, you know, and some of our best students were ones who came in without that experience. So they ended up changing that, that masculine default where they valued the students' prior programming experience and making a big difference in who ended up coming into their major and then successfully graduating.
It's so fascinating to me how much confidence is a factor in all of this, right? Mm-hmm, and I find that really interesting because we hear this a lot, right? With women in tech, they need role models. And then you look at the male default people that are always in the media. And I think it's very interesting to look at who we are putting at the front, right? Mm-hmm. Who we are looking at, who are the people who represent this field.
That's right.
And who wants to be like them as
That's
well,
right?
Yeah. I think it's very interesting because this kind of confidence level sometimes is maybe also in the wrong place, I would say.
Oh, yeah. There's good research on that boys and men tend to overestimate their abilities, you know, and girls and women tend to underestimate. And sometimes people say, we should make the girls more confident. And like, but I'm like, overestimating is not good, you know,
exactly.
Like, especially if you're in science, like, you need to be humble, you know, and you can't go around like super confident in your, you know, data and your effects and things like that. You need to like enter in with a little bit more of humility in order to be a very good scientist. And so, yeah, I strongly believe that the kind of move to make girls more like boys is harmful because what we should be thinking about is, what do we want our society to be like? Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of people do we want in our society? What do we value? And we should make both boys and girls try to achieve that, not necessarily like assuming that the boys are always doing the right thing. And, you know, the boys and men are always have the right way to do things. And if we just could change our girls, then we would solve all our problems.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Another question I have is, as someone who works across psychology and education, how do you personally see the role of researchers in influencing real world educational practice? What can researchers really do? How can they make sure that their expertise ends up in schools, in extracurricular office for students? How do they manage that?
Yeah, I think there's several ways. One of the ways is having like a partnership with schools. And we've done that several times where we'll have some kind of research partnership where we will partner with the schools, we'll sometimes collect data in the schools, and then we end up giving the research back to the school. And that's a really good way for them to learn about their own students and kind of these broader ideas that then they can implement. Another way is to disseminate research more broadly. So not only to the schools directly or to the principals or teachers directly, you know, like public writing and public speaking is another way to really get the work out there. The third thing I'll say is it's not only just like us giving the research to the schools, but a lot of the times the ideas for the work is coming from the schools and from teachers. So I have teachers that I meet with and ask them, like, what's going on right now, you know, in your world. So it really goes both ways, like, you know, knowing what's happening in the schools, things that are missing in the research, and then studying it and then sharing the findings with the with the schools is really effective.
Do you have any insight into how many or like how the distribution is of female computer science teachers in high schools in the US?
That's a great question. It's lower than in other fields. So there's a lot more women who are like math teachers, biology teachers. But I don't know the number. I'm sure it could be higher, but it's somewhere in between, like the proportion of female teachers in biology and then like the proportion of women getting degrees in the field. So somewhere between 20 and 60%.
Yeah, because this is a big problem we have in Germany at the moment. And we have a lot of male computer science teachers, which obviously also, not all of them again, but address a not so diverse audience in the schools.
That's right,
Yeah, absolutely. Since we have a lot of listeners here who work in kind of informal STEM spaces, so not in schools, but like in museums, in coding workshops, in maker camps, do you have in your findings like 2 to 3 concrete things that they can do to kind of attract a more diverse group for their programs?
I know these are like optional programs, but the more that they can be as close to mandatory as possible, because what ends up happening is when you get a lot of choice, and because of stereotypes of like who's interested, girls are less interested, boys are more interested, and who's good at things, the kids will often segregate themselves into different activities without even ever having tried it. Sometimes at University of Washington, where I'm a professor, the computer science department will do activities with the psychology department, you know, because there's psychology majors are like mostly women, to try to get more women to go to those things. So trying to figure out where they are and then trying to catch as many of them as possible, I think is a really good strategy. A lot of times I hear, so like, you know, we do some programming as part of the data analysis we do. And one of the things I hear a lot from my women students is, wow, I actually really like programming. I never tried it, you know, and it turns out that I really like it. And the other thing is like really attending to the culture of those experiences. So, you know, a lot of times when we have programs, we think, okay, we just need to expose kids to the material. But if you expose kids to material and the culture of the experience is not very welcoming for everybody, then it can backfire. And that's like a lot like my computer science high school experience, where we got a lot of exposure to the material, to the how to do computer science. Computer science is mandatory, but the class was not, the teacher never made it, you know, made it clear that girls and women could do this, could be interested in this, and could have a future in this. And as a result of that, I think many of us never put it on the table as an option, even though we were doing well in it. So it wasn't enough just to be exposed to the material. You really had to think about, does everybody feel welcome and feel like they belong in this? And sometimes all it takes is pulling the kids aside who, you know, seem to be doing well in it and saying, I don't know if you've ever considered this, but you could actually do this, you know, you have a future in this. And then you've just forced that child to consider that, you know, and that, and if I think a lot of times a lot of majors are precluded or not thought about because nobody's ever sat down and said, hey, you should consider this. And then that forces them to be like, well, now I have to come up with a reason why I don't want to do it, you know, as opposed to like, I've never even thought about why
it's
I don't want to do it.
It's a very pragmatic approach.
That's right. And and then I think the other thing is kind of meeting students where they're at mentally too. So I think it's okay to talk about like, when you think about, you know, computer science, what do you think about, you know, and try to address some of the inaccuracies that they may have about the field. Like, I think that you're always working alone, or I think that you have to work all night. And then you can be like, well, actually, let me show you some computer scientists and see what they do. And or I think I'm just coding for coding's sake. I don't think this stuff really matters. And, you know, you're like, well, actually, computer science is super important these days. And
I think that's another approach, right? To this is something that we see a lot with girls, that it's not so much about the tools and about the material, as you call it, but about the purpose. So what
that's
can
right.
I do with it? What solutions can I find? What problems can I tackle? And I don't know, do you see it the same way, that this is something that sometimes speaks more to a female audience?
Yeah, there's been some work on that. looking at kind of if you can frame science as a more communal field, so something where you can work with people and help people, how that can, it can actually help attract girls, but it can also help attract boys, because it's also turns out really important, maybe especially to this younger generation, to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, I think it's really important. And I think, like, you know, engineering is a really good example. You know, it gets sold as a field where you have to be really, really smart, or, you know, you have to do a lot of math. But really, it's a helping field. You're going out there and you're trying to solve societal problems, and you're doing it in teams. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, a lot of times engineers could do a better job of selling what they do, and making their utility and their social good obvious.
Mm-hmm. Not focus so much on how they're doing it, but what they're doing it
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And the difference that they've been able to make, the positive difference they've been able to make.
Absolutely.
Out of the box.
I would like to do a little dive into pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I would like to ask you if you have a favorite character, favorite fictional character, could be from a movie or a TV show, that has a STEM background.
There's a show in the US called Silicon Valley, which is about Silicon Valley and kind of all the stereotypes in it. And there's an Asian character who ends up, they kind of make fun of him at the beginning, but he ends up actually gaining a lot of power later. And I just think his whole character is pretty funny. So yeah, and I did school in Silicon Valley at the time when Silicon Valley was kind of like blossoming, and I felt like I met a lot of people who kind of fit those, the image that's portrayed in that show. So I find that show very funny.
Mm-hmm. Do you also have a least favorite character?
Oh, yes, actually, the show Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
The women on that show, there's like, I think, a couple of issues with them. One is that if they're in computer science and engineering, they're kind of like very socially awkward, and they're portrayed in the same way like that a lot of the men are, in the stereotypical ways. And then the other women in the show are either like love interest type people, or they're biologists. And so I wish that if they were going to put women on the show, they would put a woman in fields of computer science or engineering or physics that was more relatable to a lot of other women and girls. So yeah, I just don't like the women characters.
Absolutely agree.
Wish list. On the Mint campus, you'll find free learning resources for STEM education. The community sets the course. What kind of learning content would you like to see on Mint campus? Send us your ideas via email at community@mintcampus.org. That's what today's guest is wishing for.
I have one more kind of outro question for you, which is kind of looking into the future, let's say in like 50 years. Mm-hmm. You walk into a startup or a STEM lab, whatever scenario works better for you. How do you want it to look? What do you want to see in terms of what we were talking about, you know, like how the space looks like, and who do you want to see in it?
Mm, yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think the ideal scenario is having a space where all kinds of people feel welcome. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that I necessarily want to like remove all the stereotypically geeky stuff out of the space, because I don't, you know, I'm not looking to kick certain people out of computer science or anything like that. So I think having a space where lots of different people, there's lots of identities represented, you know, so it could be in the types of things that are on the walls or the artwork, or and I think, you know, natural things are very good. A lot of people really, you know, relate well to nature, and and so I think, you know, natural elements are really good as well. But making sure that there's kind of something that reflects a lot of different types of identities. So if you're going to have like a video game club, maybe think about having what other clubs could you have that would also speak to people who have different interests. So maybe there's going to be like a yoga club, or like, you know, a food club, or, you know, so trying to get something that speaks to all kinds of parents, and like all kinds of people are represented in that space. So trying to have a diverse representation, and showing that in the space as well.
What I take away from this conversation is a lot that people in IT need to learn a bit better to communicate what they are actually doing and to make sure that everyone can hear it and everyone feels like they belong.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your insight. It's been really interesting, this conversation.
Yeah,
it was great having you here. And I think you've given a lot of valuable perspectives for everyone working in STEM education. And to our listeners, thank you for joining. Thank you for listening in. As always, you find more information in the show notes. And if you want, you can also drop us your favorite fictional characters or your least favorite fictional characters in the comments. We are very curious to hear who else is there. Thank you so much. Take care and stay curious.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your rating. Share the podcast and check out the Mint Campus. You'll find the link and all further info in the show notes. Until next time on Mint Blowing, the podcast featuring important topics and exciting guests from the world of STEM education.